Welcome to the Veterinary Career Services Podcast, a show for veterinarians, veterinary specialists, and hospital management. Join industry expert and president of VCS, Laura Anderson, as she interviews seasoned and accomplished veterinarians that share their paths and provide insights that can help professionals achieve their career goals. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Mike Lunt, who is presently the medical director at Pantano Animal Clinic in Tucson, Arizona. This hospital is part of the Lakefield Veterinary Group, of which Dr. Lunt serves on the medical board. He has been involved in organized veterinary medicine for most of his life, serving as president of both the Southern Arizona Veterinary Medical Association and the Arizona Veterinary Medical Association. He has also served on the Humane Society of Southern Arizona Board of Directors from 2015 through 2018. And during that time, he was involved with the fundraising, the construction, and the opening of their new $10 million campus. Dr. Lent is presently the Arizona alternate delegate to the American Veterinary Medical Association and serves as co-chair of the advisory board of the National Association of Black Veterinarians. So you've done all of this in addition to practicing veterinary medicine for over 25 years. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Lent.
Oh, thanks for having me, Laura. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So you've done a lot. So tell me, what are some of the highlights of your career?
I think getting involved in organized veterinary medicine has always been very important, and it's turned out to not just give me a lot of great experiences as far as travel, but also a lot of lifelong friends that I've made. I started out even in school. I was the president of the student chapter of the American Veterinary Medical Association. They called it SCAVMA at the time. Now I think they call it SAVMA. And that was a really good introduction to the importance of organized veterinary medicine. When I was in Indianapolis, I practiced there for about 5 years. And I was involved with the Indiana Veterinary Medical Association and the Humane Society of Indianapolis there. At the time, I was a volunteer instructor for the Delta Society and training people and their animals to help go visit people in hospitals and do pet therapy, things like that. When I came to Arizona, I got involved locally. I was the president of the Southern Arizona Veterinary Medical Association group here. And that led to me getting involved with the Arizona Veterinary Medical Association, which I was president of, about 15 years ago. And in the middle of that, I got appointed by the governor at the time, Janet Napolitano, to the Arizona Veterinary Medical Examining Board and served a 5-year term on that. And that in particular, it made me a better veterinarian and a better person. I mean, you'd see a lot of disputes between clients and veterinarians. It made you realize the importance of record writing and communication in particular, because the large majority of those problems arose out of either poor medical records and or poor communication with the clients. And after that, I was also involved with the Animal Cruelty Task Force of Southern Arizona, and I've probably been involved with that for 20 years. And it's a combination of law enforcement and veterinarians that work to educate the public, as well as law enforcement officials and people involved with adult and juvenile probation on the animal abuse and the link to human violence, especially domestic violence and child abuse. So out of all those experiences, I've spent a lot of time in the last few years lecturing the students at different veterinary schools, in particular Purdue, my alma mater that I graduated from in 1991, and Midwestern University up in Phoenix. And I've spoken several times to their VBME group, which is more of a kind of a business club. And then I've spoken to the SAVMA, the student group at Purdue. So, I think it's done a couple of things as well. Not just I've made a lot of friends, I've also developed a lot of people that became mentors for me that were older than me, but had been down the road of practice management and dealing with human relation problems and other things like that, and practice challenges. And but it also just physically gets you out of your clinic and makes you take time away from it. So I think in a way, it's also helped prevent burnout. I mean, this is my 30th year of doing it, and I still very much enjoy the people that I work with and the clients, almost all the clients that I work with. There's certainly some challenging people that you still have to deal with, but I still enjoy and look forward to coming to work every day.
It certainly seems that you like working with students.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I kind of can see myself at that stage of their career, and I'm real impressed with students nowadays, because I think the way they're trained is better in some respects. And I think there's a better recognition of, you know, kind of the mental health and stress of what you're going through. You know, veterinarians are very caring people, and they're also, I've found, type A perfectionist type personalities. And just like any business, I mean, you're human, you're going to make mistakes. So I think it is very challenging, particularly with the debt load that I think a lot of younger veterinarians have, and social media, cyberbullying, things like that. I think it's a much more challenging profession to work in than it was for me 30 years ago. But I do enjoy trying to help give them my experience and coping strategies that I've had. I've been involved with martial arts and athletics for a long time. I've coached, and I'm a big believer in physical exercise, but also finding, you know, a passion outside of your profession to get involved in. I think for the same reason that I talked about organized veterinary medicine, it's real important to be able to step away from it and not make it, you know, who you are 24/7. I mean, it's an important part of who I am, but it doesn't define me. I try to get out and do stuff with my wife, with my kids. Before the pandemic, I was doing Krav Maga like for probably 8 or 9 years. It's an Israeli self-defense system. And I really enjoy it. I was teaching, and I was really learning at a high level, doing some security work. And it just, again, it was a way for me to, when I talk about compartmentalize, I mean, have a little box that you can put things in. So there was like, okay, here's my practice box. And now I'm going to go to Krav Maga. So I'm going to put away these tough cases or these tough clients. I'm going to put them in that box, put them on a shelf, and I'm going to take out the Krav Maga box and work on that for a while. Or I'm going to take out a hiking box or a whitewater rafting box or playing with my dogs, whatever. And mm-hmm. then I think you can start to develop strategies to where you just start to understand, hey, there's a finite amount of time that I have in my life, and there's a finite amount of things that I can do to solve a problem, and I can't control everything. So you just start to become, and it takes time, it takes experience, you start to become a lot more confident in your ability to let things go sometimes. And I think as a young veterinarian and a young student, it's very difficult to do that, because it's instinctive to work really hard and to be the best you can. And that's important. But I think it's also, again, it's just mentally challenging to try and be perfect, because you're just not going to be. And again, there wasn't social media when I was a student or a veterinarian, and now there is. And I think that mentally wears on younger veterinarians and younger veterinary students a lot more, you know, in terms of what I had to deal with when I was coming up. So I enjoy working with students and try to help them through that, but also learn from them. I mean, they're a lot more up to date on a lot of things that I'm just not anymore. And it's a way for me to kind of keep involved, stay open-minded, and stay current. I've been a firm believer that you can always learn from everybody that you work with and encounter if you have an open mind. I've never had the opinion that, hey, because I've done this for 30 years that I know everything. I've certainly seen a lot, but that doesn't mean that I can't learn something from somebody that's been out 3 years or even 3 months.
So that leads us into your role as medical director at Pantano Animal Clinic. You founded this practice, am I correct?
No, I didn't. Dr. Chuck Helwig did in 1973. And my former partner, Dr. Jack Quick, he retired 2 years ago or 3 years ago. He and I bought the practice from Chuck in 1996. And so Chuck had established it, and Chuck was a great mentor. He, and I followed in some of his footsteps. He was a president of the State Veterinary Association, as was my partner, Jack. And Chuck served on the Veterinary Medical Examining Board. So he was always hammering into me the importance of medical records. I mean, the quote that I always use when I talk to students is, if it's not written down, it didn't happen. And I wish I could take credit for starting this place. It's fantastic, but I've just kind of been a caretaker for 20 some years now, I guess coming up on 25.
Uh-huh. So what's it like to work there?
I think it's fun. I mean, the group of people that I work with, and there's a core group of people that have been here probably just about as long as me, maybe 16 or 17 years as opposed to 25. But it's, you know, it's an extension of my family. I mean, we have a lot of fun here. Everybody works real hard. I feel like we're all, you know, on the same page as far as helping animals, working hard, but also, you know, trying to have a good time and enjoy our clients. I mean, it's nice to get to know your clients and become friends with them and, you know, be able to help them solve problems that they have with their pets. So I've always found it to be very rewarding to be here, just because it's still fun.
It's important to have fun. It can
Absolutely.
Be a stressful job.
Oh yeah, no, it is a stressful job. I mean, I always tell people I always tell students or people that ask me about the profession, I said, you know, I've never been bored doing this, but there's certainly days where I wish I was.
How would you describe the culture at the hospital?
I think it's good. I mean, I think it's very collaborative. Like I've never felt like, you know, I'm the boss and everything that I say goes here. I mean, there's certainly times when, okay, decisions have to be made or people ask me for advice or whatnot. But on the other hand, I feel like I lean on, and Dr. Flock and the other veterinarian here, we lean on our technicians very heavily. I mean, they may find something, you know, they're handling the animal. They may say, hey, when I was drawing blood, I found this lump, or, you know, hey, the client mentioned this to me. So I think it's real important that everybody has that sense of, look, everybody's got something to contribute. It's not, you know, I'm certainly, you know, not the only person here. So I think it's extremely collaborative. It is fun, you know, and then there's also, like I said, people are very passionate about what they do here. They like, you know, they really all want to help animals. And I think people also have a really good work ethic. I mean, it's, you know, I think I always talk about, you know, sometimes there's maybe pendulum swings. And I know when I was growing up working with veterinarians, there were probably veterinarians that were workaholics and certainly worked too hard. But I think there's also, you know, there is, unfortunately, I mean, there's part of this profession is, you know, it is challenging. And, you know, unfortunately, the animals can't always get sick on our schedule. So I think everybody here is very flexible, but they're, you know, they're very hardworking too.
And so if you were to have a new graduate join the hospital as an associate, how do you onboard the new doctors or the younger doctors?
Well, we were fortunate when we brought Dr. Flocken on because she was a new grad. My partner was still here, but he was in the midst of retiring. So it worked out really well that we could put Dr. Flocken into Dr. Quick's schedule. It was a way for him to introduce her to all his clients. And so basically, you know, it was like, you know, a daily mentoring thing that way. And it, you know, and it still is. I mean, I'm always available for, you know, either by phone or here in person, like to look at x-rays or talk about cases, things like that. So when we bring somebody on, you know, we don't necessarily give them an automatically just as busy, just as full schedule as somebody that's been here for several years would have. And there's certainly a lot of opportunity for mentoring. And just like when I started out in practice, I think where a lot of that mentoring and learning happens is from the technicians as well. It's not just the veterinarians. I know I learned and still learn a great deal from veterinary technicians. I mean, they've got a ton to offer. They're extremely important in our practice.
Mm-hmm. And how many technicians do you have there?
I want to say 6 off the top of my head. I think we've got 6 certified techs.
That's fantastic for 2 doctors.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and to me, it's important. I mean, you really need to have that support for, you know, a doctor, particularly now when just as busy as we are, you know, with 2 doctors. But even with 3, it's the same thing. I mean, maybe what we do when we have 3 is, you know, you have one person that's floating between 2 doctors. And ideally, we try to, you know, there's certainly times when we have 2 doctors working appointments together. It's interesting now because we've been completely curbside for the past year. We allow clients in the building for euthanasias, but that's it. So it's interesting. In fact, I was just talking to a veterinary student that I mentor at the University of Arizona today. And that was a question that she asked me and said, well, gee, what do you miss having clients in the building? And I said, well, what's interesting is that this curbside thing is a lot more efficient. So it really is. I mean, part of it is, I guess, you know, in the past, I'd be stuck in the exam room talking to clients about their vacation or their kids or sports or something else. And they'd be having to drag me out of rooms all the time because I was running behind. And now it's just a lot more, you know, hey, let's get a good history. The techs bring the animal in. They give me the history. You know, I take a look at the animal. We put together an estimate. I go out and talk to the client. They tell me what they want to do, don't want to do, and we go from there. So it is a heck of a lot more efficient in a lot of ways and interesting. So I don't know. We'll see how the rest of this pandemic goes and how vaccination and herd immunity goes. I mean, I don't foresee us having clients in the building, you know, until at least later in the year, if that.
Okay. How long are your appointments, Dr. Lent?
20 minutes, but a lot of times going back to when you talked about bringing on a new veterinarian, a lot of times we'll do, you know, 30 minutes for a newer vet with sick appointment.
Got it.
You know, and I've always given veterinarians that have worked with me a lot of flexibility. And I'm like, look, if you want to do more, take less, that's great. You know, and then eventually, you know, they get up to speed. And then, you know, but even there's times even now, if I have an animal coming in or if it's a client I know is going to be asking a million questions and take a long time, I may give myself 30 minutes on some appointments as well. So again, I try to give the people that I work with a lot of responsibility and a lot of flexibility because I am not a micromanager by any means. I'm getting too old and tired to do any of that. So and to me, it's like, look, we're all grown adults here. We all care about what we do. So to me, I found that the more you empower, you know, the people that you work with, the better it is because they're a lot more confident. They're a lot more efficient and, you know, and it takes a lot off of my plate.
Mm-hmm. And how about surgery? Do you all cut every day or just certain days of the week?
Yeah, I used to have 2 surgery days a week and now I just have 1. Dr. Flocken's got 2. You know, when we had three doctors here, I'm trying to remember. I guess we did have, I know we had at least 4 surgery days a week. We might have even had 5. We're open on Saturdays, 8 to noon, and we don't do any procedures on that day. But yeah, during the week, you know, we typically would, particularly if we had 3 doctors.
And you certainly would help them. They could scrub in with you or you could scrub in with them, meaning a new graduate if they needed it.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. That's the other thing I've been impressed with a lot of newer graduates. I think schools have recognized, you know, look, if you're going to charge some of the amounts that they do for tuition, then the people that you're turning out, you know, should be able to earn a pretty good living pretty quickly. And, you know, and I know Midwestern, you know, they're taking their students to do surgery even as early as their 2nd year, which, I mean, I was talking to Dr. Flocken about it. She probably came out of school with a lot more surgical experience than I did. I was pretty fortunate at Purdue. My class in 1991 was the first class to have tracking. So if you knew you wanted to be a small animal vet, you could have more flexibility with your clinical rotations to do that. And I was able to take like an orthopedic and neurosurgery clerkship and an extra surgery block. So I probably got a lot more surgical experience than previous graduates had. And they would, you know, and it was also, it was kind of incumbent upon you as a student. It's like, look, if you want, there's opportunities for you that are available, but you have to kind of go above and beyond to get some of those. So they would put me on call with the resident. So I'd get to scrub in on, you know, back surgeries, things like that. And we'd see some, you know, emergency calls, maybe in the middle of the night. They gave me the keys to the anatomy lab so I could practice approaches. And then they would also, myself and the other clerk, we got to do a lot of simple fracture repairs for the local county humane society. It was a pretty good deal they had set up. Like when I was a junior and we did spays and neuters, we did all the spays and neuters for the local county humane society. Yeah, it was a great idea. I mean, it was a real win-win for everybody. I mean, we were absolutely supervised, but it was basically, they, you know, so the local humane society didn't have to, you know, have their veterinarian, you know, be doing surgery all day. Their veterinarian could actually treat sick animals, and you know, they could save a heck of a lot of their budget and get a lot of animals, not just spayed and neutered, but if they had any kind of medical condition, either a specialist or one of the students, depending on what it was, would work on them. So I got to do a lot of simple fracture repairs that way too.
So tell me this, what's on the horizon for Pantano?
Like I said, I'd definitely like to get, you know, at least one more veterinarian in here, maybe even two. I mean, this is a practice that, I mean, historically it's probably been, you know, a three doctor practice, but I think lately, as busy as we've been, it could be, you know, maybe like a 3.5 doctor practice. Like, I'm not getting any younger, so I think I'm, you know, going to work at least 3 more years, but I certainly wouldn't be averse to working a little bit less if we could get more veterinarians in here. Like I said, I think this place is great. I mean, 3 of our 6 veterinary technicians, you know, have been with us just for a few years. I mean, the other 3 have probably been with me for over 15. So I think there's a really good, promising group of younger veterinary technicians and younger doctors that, you know, that are moving forward as well. So I think this place has got a great reputation, you know, that I think can, you know, persist well into the future. I think it's just a matter of getting some younger people in here to give the old guy a little bit of a break, but I'll still be around. I'll still be, like I said, I love working with students, and I love, you know, talking about cases and helping people out with things. So, you know, I'm certainly going to be around for that. And like I said, for the next 3 years, I don't see my schedule changing drastically. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the rest of this year with the pandemic and vaccination and everything else. But it's been a kind of a wacky year. It's been like a whole year of Groundhog Day, it seems like.
Absolutely. Did you have tenure like Pantano has among the technicians is impressive. I mean, it really speaks to the culture of the hospital.
Yeah, no, it's one of the things that I've found, like, yeah, people have asked me, like, you know, and I've talked to younger vets that have started hospitals, and they've asked my advice, and, you know, and they say, you know, what kind of things should you avoid, and what kind of things are, you know, and I tell them, it's like the thing that probably kills a lot of hospitals is turnover, you know, and I mean, obviously there may be things in a culture that lead to that, but it's like particularly with veterinary technicians. I mean, I'm extremely fortunate in that all of our technicians are used to working with us. So a lot of them usually know how I'm going to handle a case or what I'm going to do before I even tell them that. So a lot of times, you know, they may have already prepared an estimate, you know, and then say, hey, does this look good or should I add something in? So it makes life that much easier when you're working with people that, you know, are on the same page and sometimes a step or two ahead of you. And again, I treat them as colleagues. So I tell them, I go, look, I'm not above making a mistake. If you see something that looks weird with a dosage or something that looks odd that I'm missing or forgetting, like, speak up and let me know. I'm not going to yell at anybody. I'm going to thank them if, you know, they picked up on my mistake.
I'm sure they appreciate the respect, the engagement as well.
Yeah, it's important. Like I said, we're all pulling on the same rope and we're trying to accomplish the same thing. So it only just makes sense to me that that's how you treat people, because, you know, if you want people to, you know, do more at a higher level, be efficient, things like that, well, you've got to give them that responsibility to do it. You've got to show them how to do it. You know, I've seen a lot of veterinarians, and I think as you get older, it's real easy to start getting aggravated and lose your patience. But I've seen a lot of them where I think they lose their patience and get angry at people they work with. But in reality, sometimes the fault is theirs, because they haven't, you know, shown somebody how to do something, or they haven't taken the time to explain something, or they haven't even given people the flexibility or the responsibility, you know, to point things out or to do things. So I've just found that it, you know, it makes, you know, it just really makes this for a better place to work. And I think people, you know, particularly veterinary technicians, I mean, I'm always amazed when I see or talk to veterinarians that are proud that they still put in catheters or draw blood. And I tell them, I haven't done that in probably 15 years, because why should I? I don't, you know, that's what I have veterinary technicians for, is to do those things that they're a heck of a lot better than I am at. And me to just focus on diagnosis and treatment and surgery and the types of things that only I can do. So I think sometimes veterinarians don't quite think about what they're doing, but, you know, maybe they've always just done things a certain way, or they're more afraid of giving up control for whatever reason. But that's not kind of how I've looked at things.
Well, sounds like a great place, Dr. Len. It really does. Well, thank you for joining me today and telling us more about Pantano. And by the way,
absolutely.
Externships, you all do host externs, am I correct?
Yeah, we're signed up with Midwestern's extern program. And I believe we're definitely signed up with the University of Arizona to be like a clinical training partner with them. And I think we're in the process of getting signed up with Lincoln Memorial, who I believe is in Tennessee, and to take their fourth year students. And then I think we've also signed up with Purdue and Colorado State. So absolutely. And if there's somebody that hears this that's a student somewhere else and they want to come here, definitely contact me, let me know, and we'll get signed up there too. Sometimes I'm just not quite sure of, you know, how far people are willing to travel. Maybe in January, they're a lot more willing to travel when where they're living is 20 below zero and it's 73 degrees and sunny here right now.
I think you're right.
One of the advantages. But then again, if they're somewhere in July, then maybe this place doesn't look as good when it's 105 here and maybe 75 somewhere else. So, but no, we've got, I mean, the town is fantastic. We're surrounded by four mountain ranges. We're bookended by two national parks. San Diego and the, you know, beaches in California are 8-hour drive away. We're an hour and a half from the Mexican border, 4 hours to beaches in Mexico. Mount Lemmon is a 40-minute drive from the valley floor, and it's at 9,300 feet. And it's the southernmost ski area in the United States. I've got a cabin up in Flagstaff, and normally I'd be going up there to ski. I haven't with the pandemic, but the town itself is at 7,000 feet. And right now they've got a 48-inch base at Snowball, and they have a gondola up there. So it's a great state, and it's a great town. I mean, I've lived here since 1996, and I still enjoy it, even though I grew up on the East Coast and went to vet school in the Midwest. This is it's hard to beat the weather that you have here, and even the heat. It is dry. Like, you get in the shade, and it's a lot cooler. I've experienced the heat in Florida and Indiana and New Jersey, and when the humidity is 90 or 95%, there's kind of nowhere to go, even in the shade, to escape it. So there's a lot of really cool things here, a lot of great hiking, a lot of beautiful mountains, and really good people too. Everybody here is pretty laid back and gets along pretty well. We've got a great University of Arizona here in town with its own veterinary school, and a really cool downtown, and 23 miles of the best Mexican food in the world. So got the whole deal.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lent. It's been wonderful. Again, it's been wonderful to learn more about your career and more about Pantano.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, Laura.
Bye.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Veterinary Career Services Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast to ensure you never miss an episode. For feedback, questions, discussion topic requests, or if there is anything we can do for you, feel free to contact us at laura@vetcareerservices.com. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Veterinary Career Services Podcast.